Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Nick Baer, and Nick spent 4 years as an active duty Army infantry officer, where he completed U.S. Army Ranger School and led an infantry platoon in Fort Hood, Texas. He is also the CEO of Baer Performance Nutrition, the founder of Embrace the Suck Training, host of the Baer Performance Podcast, and the author of 25 Hours a Day. He also has a YouTube channel with more than 600,000 subscribers. And in this conversation, we got into his mindset, some of the lessons he's learned from the various trainings that he's done, the advice he would give to himself. Overall, I found this such a fruitful and rewarding conversation from someone who is clearly pursuing the highest version of themselves. And so, obviously, I really enjoyed it. I hope you will as well. And if you do, let me know on Twitter, at HeyDannyMiranda, and feel free to share this episode with a friend. Until then, this is my conversation with Nick Baer.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
First of all, Nick, thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time, and I'm excited for this conversation.
No, thanks for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, so I figured we'd start it off with college for you, and start off by, you know, people are chanting BPN at a college party of yours, and they're not saying it in a supporting way. They're saying it to make fun of you. And now you're sitting here. BPN is everywhere. It's a huge business. So why don't we start off the conversation by talking about how you felt in that moment when people are chanting BPN to make fun of you in some respect?
Yeah, man, I think there's been a lot of moments in my life where people have doubted the things that I've wanted to do. Most recently, you know, I said I wanted to do a sub-3-hour marathon, and everyone said, you will never do the sub-3-hour marathon. I said, watch me, I'm about to put in this work. And it took time. So there's been a lot of those moments in my life. Going back to, you know, I started BPN in 2012. And when I started the company, everyone kind of thought it was a joke. They thought I was trying to do something that was impossible. Because I come from a small town that, you know, central Pennsylvania, big farming town, big farming area. And I wanted to build this e-commerce business. And I was putting myself out there. I was showing vulnerabilities where I was filming myself. I was trying to create YouTube content, and no one really around me or in my area was doing that. So here I am filming myself, making these meals and training and posting them online, and it's getting criticized. And for a while, I wanted to kind of keep that away from, like, I didn't want my friends and family to find it, you know, which is interesting. And then when they did, it was almost like they just wanted to make fun of it, which was an awful feeling, you know? So that was like the first time I remember I was at this party and everyone starts chanting BPN. And it wasn't necessarily people that were my friends, but people I knew of. And they were chanting it in a way that wasn't really supporting me, but criticizing me. And that sucked. You know, that sucked. But that became fuel to push me further and accomplish things that I wanted to do and that I wanted to build.
Why did you keep going? Whereas so many other people would have said, you know, my friends and family, they see me in this light. They're watching me on YouTube and that feels weird. Why did you keep going?
You know, people ask this question all the time. And for the first 5 years of the business, I didn't pay myself. I couldn't afford to pay myself. I didn't take a paycheck until 2017. I started the brand in 2012. And what essentially kept me going was pure passion. Like, I found something that I had so much passion and purpose behind and in that I didn't care if I was getting paid for it at the time. I was in the Army, I was in the military. where I was getting this paycheck, and BPN was this thing that I was doing with all my other free time on the side. So that allowed me to build the company the way I wanted to build it, for one, but I had so much passion behind everything that I was doing that it didn't necessarily provide me a paycheck, but it paid me in other ways. You know, it fulfilled me. It gave me so much fulfillment.
So you're not getting paid, but you have this passion and your excitement. Where do you think that comes from, that passion? And did you always have that, a sense of passion for what you were doing from a young age? When did you find that? And when did you really realize, like, oh, I'm onto something here?
In retrospect, when I've thought about this, I've always had a passion for creating things. So when I was growing up, I got really into, I'm talking like 12, 13 years old. I got really into like woodworking, and I was asking for like power tools for Christmas. So like I liked creating things, building things. And then I found this hobby of cooking, and I loved creating like in the kitchen. And then when I was like 16 years old, I started like my own like lawn care business, and I was cutting yards and cutting grass. And I found a lot of passion and purpose behind that. So I had like this driven like need to create. And I think early on I found that, and everything I've done after that was like, what's the root cause of me wanting to do these things? I love creating things. I love creating systems and teams and projects. And that's what I love. That's what I love to do.
Yeah. And we'll definitely get into all those things later on in the conversation. I want to know what you would tell someone who's having trouble figuring out how to create or figuring out how their passion, right? Like a lot of people are lost, and a lot of people don't know and don't have this inherent drive and passion for what they're doing. But what would you say to that person who is having trouble creating or having trouble with their passion?
Yeah, a lot of times they're focused on the wrong thing. You know, people reach out to me, especially in the fitness space, and they say like, should I start a supplement company? Should I start an apparel company? And they're like very closed-minded, where they think they have to be put in this box and move in a certain direction. And I think a lot of people are so focused on finding that one thing that fulfills them, that is their purpose. And they're more focused on like finding that thing as soon as possible, rather than just like experimenting and putting themselves out there and trying things and gaining experience. So if you're so focused on like needing and wanting passion right now, I think you're focused on almost the wrong thing, where the focus should be on, you know, trying all these different things, experimenting, learning, finding mentors, like putting yourself out there and finding what you truly love. I'm very grateful and fortunate to have found what I truly love and am passionate about very early on in life. Like I was, you know, 18, 19 years old when I discovered that, and it worked out. You know, now I'm 30 years old, and I got to spend the last 10, 11 years of my life building something I truly am passionate about. And I know that is rare, and I'm very grateful and appreciative for that. But I know that not many people find it that early on. Some people don't find what they truly love until they're 30, 40, 50 years old. And that's okay. But I feel like people, they put themselves like as soon as they graduate high school, it's like this clock starts and they're racing against the clock. Like you control your time. You control that clock. You're not on this squeeze. You know, and I feel like people just, they feel like they're so constrained by time. They have to find what they love so fast that they choose the wrong thing.
And it's like, you're still young. You're 30 years old, but you're still young. And I think that's a very important part of it. You know, I want to talk about your early days in YouTube. And, you know, you started there on YouTube 2014. Is that correct?
Yep, 2014.
So what were some of the mistakes you made in the early days of building on YouTube and putting yourself out there?
Yeah, I mean, you don't really know what you don't know. So I've been really good at being ignorant to risks that I take, where if there's something I want to do, I just do it. You know, a lot of people are so paralyzed by analysis. That has never been an issue for me. That is one of my strengths. I am a very actionable person. If there's something I want to do or think I want to do, I'm going to make it happen like yesterday. So when I first started YouTube, I didn't really know how to use the platform or what the platform was used for. At the time, I was like, I'm just going to document my training and my nutrition and show some meals and try to help people in the fitness space. And I didn't really know how to use that platform or use like a social media platform at all in general. And I started the business 2012. I didn't start YouTube until 2014, which in today's age, it's kind of like the opposite way is most people build this platform first and then they launch the business to monetize. I built the business first and then realized I need to start using social media to build the business. So one of my biggest mistakes early on was I didn't know how to use storytelling as a narrative for what I'm doing, the brand I'm building, and what I'm trying to accomplish and create. And storytelling is massive. Whether you're telling your story or you're trying to relate to someone and relate to their story or sell a product or sell a mindset. And I really learned storytelling. You know, I started my channel in 2014. I really didn't learn storytelling until 2016, 2017, when I discovered Casey Neistat. And when I discovered Casey Neistat, I was like, this guy captures me. And it could just be him riding around New York City on a skateboard, but he's capturing me. What is he doing? He is telling a story. And every video, he's telling a story and tells that story so well. So I used pieces of the way Casey documented and created and kind of blended that into the way I was living in South Korea with the military and building a business. And I took so much away from watching Casey's vlogs and studying the way he was a storyteller. And even to this day, like I realize even more now than I did in 2016, storytelling and being able to tell a story is one of the most powerful things you can master.
So what would you say to someone who's just building on YouTube and trying to get better at storytelling? What would be the first two or three things you would say to that person?
I think one is realize that you have to build your own story first. And that comes with like this process. Everyone wants to go from point A to point B and they want to do it as fast as possible. Where I'm kind of the opposite way, where point A for me is where I'm at right now or where I started. Point B is somewhere that I typically choose. It's so far in the future that I know is going to take me a long time. So I'm not necessarily rushing to get there. I want to get there, but I want to get there the best way possible. You know, I want to build the best brand possible along the way in order to make it happen. So realizing that you are living in this story, the story is a living, breathing thing. Don't be afraid to show weaknesses and vulnerabilities during that process. But realize like you don't necessarily want your story to be short. You want your story to be this massive thing. I want my life to be this massive, big story that has ups, it has downs, it has wins, it has losses, it has conflict. Like I want my life to be the story that is the best movie you ever watched. You know, and I think when you accept the fact that it has to have all these pieces, you're less afraid to make mistakes and failures or even take action in the first place.
How has viewing your life as a series of stories impacted your reality? I mean, a lot of people don't think about life that way. It's like story A, story B, and you're thinking YouTube series here, YouTube clip here. Has that impacted your reality in any meaningful way?
I think so, in a sense of I want to keep taking on these new challenges all the time. as soon as one chapter's ending, I'm already thinking, what is the next chapter? You know, so right now we're wrapping up this series on YouTube that was meant to be in preparation for Ironman Texas. Then Ironman Texas got canceled. So now we had to choose a different race. And that's all part of the story. But as soon as that race is over May 2nd, you know, what is the next chapter? We're already thinking, what is that next series? What is the next chapter that provides more challenges in wins and losses and conflicts? Like, I'm using storytelling because I want the people who are part of this business, the employees, the staff, the athletes, I want them to feel a part of the story as well. And to make them feel a part of the story, you give them responsibility and duties and be a part of the wins and losses and the conflicts. So yeah, I see my life as a story, and I want to make this story really great. And I want to bring people along, you know, along the way. I don't want to live this story by myself. I want to bring everyone with me and say, hey, let's do this together. It's going to be more fun together than it is alone.
Yeah. And one of the ways you've thought, you have such an interesting philosophy in terms of hiring and bringing people around you, because whereas a lot of people think about hire fast and fire, what is the saying? Hire fast, fire slow, or opposite?
Fire fast, hire slow. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you think of it like, we're going to hire slow and we're going to really make sure that each person comes into the process and doesn't hurt our culture. You know, I thought that was an interesting way of viewing things. And how has that impacted your process?
Yeah, for me, culture is everything within a business. I want people to come here and they want to show up to work every single day. Like, I don't want no one to look forward to Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays. Like, I want people to look forward to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I want to come to work and work around these people. And building a team, building a culture is very hard. And as you scale, as you grow, it becomes even more difficult. So right now, like, there's probably 5 jobs that I need to fill right now, but I'm not going to just fill those positions with bodies. I'm going to fill those positions with the best person possible. That might take 30 days. That might take 3 months. That might take a year. And maybe if I fill that position faster, we might make more money. It might grow the business, but it might hurt the culture, you know? So for me, I want to scale the brand, but I don't want to scale the brand at the expense of the company culture. So it's this balance of controlled growth with the right people.
Yeah. And it goes against what you normally see in our culture of fast, go as fast as possible, try to make things as big as possible. Where do you think that comes from?
For one of the things that I learned a lot in the military about people, working with people, leading people, and I was an infantry platoon leader. So I had, you know, 40 soldiers and non-commissioned officers working with me. And I was really fortunate that the platoon that I was assigned to and the company that I was assigned to had an amazing culture, amazing camaraderie with an infantry company. And when I transitioned out of the military, I wanted to bring that into my business. And I kind of just saw this parallel from military values and culture to what I wanted to create in my own business from like a smaller level organization. And I said, I'm in control of this. Like, I can do this if I want to. I think a lot of times business owners or entrepreneurs think that they have to make certain decisions based off of what everyone else is doing or has done in the past. And some of these decisions are at the expense of, you know, cultures or at the expense of positivity and all these things that, you know, maintain this camaraderie. And I realized that I am in control of everything I'm building right now. So I'm going to build it the way I want to build it.
I love that, man. Kind of switching gears here is I noticed you have a bunch of tattoos, and I know that one of them is Go One More, but I also noticed you've got an owl on your one of your shoulders or your arms, back of your arms. What does that owl represent, if anything?
Yeah, so I got that after Ranger School, and my journey in Ranger School was quite interesting because typically a 61-day course, I spent 145 days there because I failed two phases, and one of those phases was during Best Ranger competition. So I was there for like 4.5 months. And the owl for me, I kept thinking of like this tattoo I wanted to get when I was in. And it was about wisdom because of like the perspective I gained while I was in the school and how I was going to use this perspective on all the other things moving forward in my life afterwards. And for me, like the owl symbolized wisdom when I was there. And that's, I wanted to get this piece of just like wisdom from this experience in this part of my life. And that was like the main reason for the owl. I mean, I eventually want to finish a whole sleeve on this arm. And I have like the concepts I'm thinking of already, but I want to use the arm again as a story, like a story of my life. So as I keep moving forward and making the decisions and learning these things, I want to add tattoos to this arm that tell my story, that are a reminder of like where I started and where I'm heading.
Any idea of what's coming next on the Nick Bear arm?
Yeah. I'm keeping those kind of secret until they're done. But I have some ideas of things that I want to create. It's just finding the right person to embed them into my body for a lifetime and eternity.
Totally get it. So you've been to Ranger School, did it for 145 days. You've ran a sub 3-hour marathon starting at 4:25, I believe. Like, you've done Ironmans, you've done absurd stuff and a lot of difficult things. But I'm curious, what's the most difficult thing you've done in your life?
Build my business. Wow. Building the business has been the most difficult thing. And you know, when people always, you know, walk up to me, my brother, and the team, like, I've been following the journey forever. Been following since South Korea. My response is typically, it's been a journey. It's been a journey because started the brand 2012. First 3 years, we were at a loss. You know, we made $20,000 a year in revenue, but profit, we were at a loss. By year five, I was finally able to pay myself. So by year five, we actually went from 2012, 2013, 2014. Each year we did 20,000 in revenue. Then we jumped up to like 300,000. We had this big jump. Then from 300,000 to 1.7, 1.7 to 3.2, 3.2 to 5.6, and then 5.6 to over 20 million in revenue. And that's been the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And it's become such a massive part of my life. You know, for the last 9 years, I've been building this brand and I've sunk everything into building this and doing this, but it's been so rewarding. The ROI on my life has been massive. The things that I've learned and, you know, the struggles we went through to grow the brand, has been brutal, but it's been such a rewarding experience.
Take us through one of those brutal moments where you're just like, how is this happening? How is life? How do I get through this? What is one of those moments for you?
2017 was the year we did 7 figures for the first year. And this was probably the hardest year because cash flow became an issue. We were self-funded. So, you know, we didn't have investors. We didn't take out any loans after that initial. And what was happening was our sales were increasing so much and so fast that we couldn't keep up with production. So we had 12-week lead times with production with our manufacturer, and we didn't have any terms. So we had to pay off all the inventory before it even shipped to us. So what happened was we'd pay off the inventory, it would ship to us, we'd sell out in like days, maybe weeks, and then we'd have to stack production orders on top of each other to try to get out of the slump of continuously getting inventory in, selling out, running out of cash, having to pay expenses. So digging ourselves out of that position in that situation, you know, 2017 was just a stressful year of cash flow, running out of cash because we're sinking all of it into inventory to grow and scale and keep up. So that year was a year where I didn't sleep much at all. In order to fall asleep, I had to take melatonin because I had so much stress and anxiety. And I was never tired really because I was so driven on just pure purpose and passion. And that's why it was like 2017, the way I described that year is it felt like every morning waking up to Christmas. It felt like Christmas morning every single morning.
And then how does it feel on the other side when you start to see the light? What was the first signs that it wasn't going to be like that forever?
Oh, man, maybe end of 2018, early 2019, you know, you get to a point where like you can dig yourself out, and not everyone gets to that point. But like we were very strategic. We were very lean and we grew very disciplined. Like we were very disciplined in our growth. And one of the things we did is we'd create, you know, different systems or programs or digital pieces of content that allowed us to internally fund our growth. So between training programs or nutrition programs, the cost, the overhead is lower. So we could create these products that then we would pump the money back into the product-based business that allowed us to internally fund the growth of BPN. And that was like one of the smartest things we've done and allowed us to dig ourselves out. And then we got to a point, you know, obviously as you grow, as you scale, there's always issues, but when you can dig out of cash flow issues, it's a really good feeling. You can sleep again at night.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to a podcast with you on My First Million, and they're asking you like, why don't you just get rid of the product business and focus strictly on the info products and all the other stuff? And you're like, man, I love the supplements. I love doing what we do. And I thought that spoke so true to your passion and where your heart is. Like, you don't care about the money from that respect. You want to do the mission with the people you love and surrounding you. And I thought that spoke to who you are.
Yeah. I mean, we have the goal of, and we will get there. We'll reach it. It's not a matter of if, but when, to be a $100 million company. And that isn't to put $100 million in my back pocket. That is to hire more employees, offer more positions and staff, pay people more. Like, I get so much reward out of like building a team and taking care of a team. And that's where like, I thrive. That's what I love. So that's why I would never get rid of the product-based business, even though it would, you know, cost me more, is because that provides me so much fulfillment. That is like, that's my baby. That's my life.
Where does that desire to just bring people in, help people, where does that come from?
I think part of it's the military.
Yeah.
I think part of it is, you know, having the opportunity to lead an infantry platoon and feeling what that feels like, and then wanting to recreate that when I get out of the military. I think another part of it is just like the way I was raised in my family, and watching like my mom as I grew up, and the passion she had is she was a teacher in special education. She taught and coached Special Olympics. She got really involved with our community, raising money and helping people who are less fortunate. And I watched her, and she did all these things, didn't get paid for them, but she did it because she had so much passion and purpose behind it that like she would wake up with this driven purpose and passion. And that's what fueled her. That's what kept her going. And I saw that and I watched that, and that kind of just grew into my life as I got older.
You mentioned the wanting to be $100 million company, and you seem like a guy who's so driven by growth and so driven by the next thing and the next challenge. When does it become enough, if ever?
I don't know. I'll let you know if we ever get there. I think there's, you know, I have the words "going more" tattooed on my body for a reason. It's just, it's the way I live. You know, it's constant. What is the next thing? How do we get better? How do we improve? How do we bring more people on? How do we help more people? I don't think you ever reach a point where it's, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Because the mission is not that. The mission is to go one more. It's to help more people, like help more people improve their lives, improve their health, improve their fitness, improve their business. So I don't know if you ever reach that, but I'll let you know if I ever do.
it's an infinite game that never stops. And that's the fun of it. I want to talk about, you know, you had a recent vlog where you said what is considered hard work for so many is where you set the standard. And how does one get to that point?
Yeah, I think one of those things is that everyone's always putting hard work on this pedestal. And it drives me insane. It's like two words I will never use. And I said this in my book, grind and hustle. I'll never use those two words. They just like don't exist in my vocabulary. And it's just like, for me, my baseline standard is what I consider as hard work for a lot of people. And as the CEO of a business, as someone with this social media following, I have a responsibility, and a responsibility to set a standard. Because if I set the standard high, everyone else uses that standard as the baseline, which doesn't just help the business, like my business, but helps them set the standard for their business, their family, their life, their fitness, everything they do. So I have this responsibility to set the baseline high because I have a responsibility to lead our personal team and lead people online as a role model. So I hate when people put hard work on this pedestal where it's like you do one hard workout, you do one like month of hard work on your business, and all of a sudden you have to reward yourself. So now I've been doing this for 9 years, and like my baseline of what is hard work just keeps going up. And that's just like where I start the day. And I never let myself dip below that. It's just, how do I push further than this? Because when I see people put this hard work, hustle, grind mindset on this pedestal, it's just a turnoff for me.
What is a normal day in your life look like?
So right now I'm an Ironman, or I'm in like, no, Challenge Cancun, which was Ironman prep. So I used last week, for example. Last week was the peak of the build with training. So my training alone was 22 hours a week. So typically I'll wake up at like 4:30 and I'll make coffee and I'll answer emails. So I'll use like that first hour of the day just to answer emails and get caught up on kind of what came in from the night prior. And then I'll go for a morning run. So I'll just leave from my house, do like a 5 to 8 mile run typically. And I come back from that run, eat breakfast. And when I get I'm constantly looking at the clock because I know I want to be in work by 8 a.m. So I'll eat breakfast, the office by 8. And then like 8 until lunch, in meetings, it's collaboration projects. We're working on so many new things right now for the brand that's constantly trying to push things forward. And then during lunch, because my lunch, like when I eat, is actually like 10:30. So I'll be eating while I'm working so that I can do a training session during lunch. So like I'll hop on the bike here, or I'll go for a quick swim to knock out my second training session. And then from say 12:30 to 4, it's more meetings, it's more filming, it's creating content, it's planning content. You know, we're doing a lot of stuff with our website right now. We're building out a new gym in our facility. We're restructuring our operations. We're just planning for growth. We did a lot of new partnerships. And then like 4:30, I'll do typically my last training session of the day. So like at my peak, it was 3 hours of training a day, roughly. Then after that, head home, eat dinner with the wife. And then after dinner, it's typically you know, answering emails, working until 10, 10:30 PM to go to sleep and do the whole thing over the next day. So, you know, we've taken on a lot of new projects early on in 2021. And a lot of those new projects are to facilitate the growth of what we experienced in the last 18 months. So restructuring systems, restructuring operations, setting up things to facilitate the second half of 2021. But like the things we're setting up right now are more importantly set up to facilitate the growth into 2022. So we're constantly planning 2 years out and setting up systems and operations for 2 years out.
Yeah. And one thing you mentioned with planning is that you always like to plan at least 12 weeks ahead. How do you think about planning in such an uncertain world? You don't know when the vaccine, you don't know how the vaccine stuff is going to affect. You don't know how COVID stuff is going to change. How do you think about planning in an uncertain world?
I plan in a way that I'm in control. And I'm not really necessarily planning for the worst to happen. I'm planning for the best to happen, best case scenario. So like, well, everyone else is bunkering down and afraid of what's going to happen and what's about to come. I'm kind of just like driving through. I see that as an opportunity. So for example, when COVID hit and everyone was kind of slowing down operations, they were pulling back. That was our opportunity to hit the ground running hard. Like I saw that as an opportunity as, hey, well, all the other businesses are kind of using some of these things as an excuse. We're going to do what we do best and take massive action and build. So I've seen so many businesses use COVID, for example, as an excuse to become lazy or complacent in a lot of things. I mean, I can't tell you how many businesses I reach out to. They don't answer emails. They don't answer phone calls. They're not trying to work with you or for you. Like, we don't use excuses to slow down. Like, we're constantly taking action and setting the standard and holding that standard. So I plan for best case scenario and worst case scenario, but I'm going to take action either way. You know, I think so many people are using world situations or circumstances as an excuse to become lazy.
So COVID hits and it starts to become a thing in the psyche. Take me through your mindset. As soon you mentioned briefly that, you know, you were going to push through, but it obviously disrupted your planning in that 12-week cycle from February to April, right? So what was your thought process as soon as it happened?
I mean, my thought process that first week, we had some businesses obviously were hit harder than others in COVID. And we were pretty fortunate to have grown during that time because we had a commodity. We had supplements, we had protein powder, it's a commodity. So our business did do very well during this last year. But for me, like that first week, I remember when COVID kind of like went 100% full swing and we kind of just sat back that first week or two. We didn't play any cards. We didn't take any like immediate reactional emotional decisions. A lot of people got very reactional and made these emotional decisions that were either good or bad. We kind of just sat back and let things play out for a week or two. And then when we kind of saw the way it was going to play out, we started making strategic moves in order to how we can best, facilitate and move during the situation. It's kind of like one of the things I did when I first got a platoon in the military, where the best advice I ever got was get to your platoon. And instead of getting there and making these quick changes right away, sit back, watch, observe, see what's going well, see what needs improved on, and then slowly introduce changes that you see are going to be best fit. Don't come in here and start changing things left and right based off emotional decisions, but come in, make decisions after an observational period. And I learned a lot you know, being a platoon leader of the infantry, a brand new leader in the army. And I still to this day use those things that I've learned in business.
Well, yeah, that's incredible and makes a lot of sense. Going back to the sub 3 hour marathon, thought that was so cool how you documented that journey. And I'm curious, what was the most challenging part of that specific journey getting to under 3 hours?
I think just how long it was, like the training itself, because yeah, you know, I would sign up for races, they would get canceled. I'd sign up for races, they get canceled. Sign up for races, they get canceled. So you're constantly going the cycle of building into a marathon prep and then having to readjust. Building into a marathon prep, having to readjust. And I learned so much that process from like a mindset perspective, but also from a physical training perspective and things that I had to improve on and change. So I just learned so much about running and how to get faster by using like aerobic base building, by using tempo runs and track workouts to like slowly improve. Because the thing about endurance is you can improve your endurance pretty quickly, but like to get to a certain level, like to run a sub 3 hour marathon, I had to go back to the basics and I had to spend a lot of time running slow, easy miles to build this aerobic base. And once I built this aerobic base and this foundation, then I could add in tempo runs and track workouts to start working on speed. So it was kind of like this orchestra that you're like, you're coordinating this orchestra, building this aerobic foundation and base and adding in tempo workouts and then learning your fueling and nutrition strategy and then a race strategy and then racing the course based off the weather and the terrain. And it all comes together in this symphony. And then like the day of execution, it just like it clicks and it works after a taper and you're fresh. And it just felt so good to cross that finish line. It felt so good.
And I loved your coach talking about, you know, at some point you have to push your athlete. At some point you have to tell them to ease up a little bit because I believe you're faster than expected. How has working with a coach played a role in all of this?
Oh, I mean, having a coach is great because when you're training for something, like for the example, this sub 3 hour marathon, I was doing it for a year. So you start getting your head where it's like, man, I'm too far behind. I'm too far forward. Like you start getting in your head and you have a coach saying, hey, like based on my experience, you're right where you need to be. Like slow up, pull back. Or you're running too hard. Like you're running a threshold or you're like going to redline. So having someone that is overseeing the progress you're making and implementing workouts based off that progress is great. But like running, for example, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Ford versus Ferrari. Like running is, I like compare running to that where like if you have a vehicle, if you have a car and you want it to go fast, you can push that car to like redline. So like if you push it past redline, RPMs go too high for too long, that engine's going to blow up and it's not going to be reliable. It's done. So you want to hover right under redline. So you're going as hard as possible for as long as possible without breaking the engine. Your body's the same way for like a run like that, where you want to be right under red line on certain parts of that run, no matter what distance that is. You want to be pushing it to the point where it's going as hard and as fast as possible. But if you cross that red line, it's going to give up on you. It can't go any further, just like an engine on a car. So on a race, if you get to the point where you redline for too long, you're done. Your heart rate got too high. Your body gives up. You're not going to finish that race. So that was like one of the best comparisons I ever picked up on. And learning how to race smart is super important for something like that.
You spend so many hours on the bike and so many hours running and swimming. So what's the most common thing that where your head will go? What's the most common thing you think about or just ponder? Because you don't use headphones usually. You're just all mental. So what is Nick Bear's head space like on one of those long runs or long bike runs?
It's solitude. It's like that is one of my good friends, mentors. Mike Irwin, he's the founder and executive director of Team RWB, which is a nonprofit who raises money and awareness for veterans transitioning out of the military through physical fitness. He wrote a book on solitude, and it's all about, like, leaders need solitude, time by yourself in your head, thinking creatively on what you're doing next, what you're currently working on, how you're going to get from point A to point B. Endurance training for me, these moments by myself, is why I like training by myself for one, and with no music, is that I can be in my head and all these distractions in the world are eliminated. I have my phone's not going off. I'm not answering emails. I'm just focused on one singular topic, and I can really dissect it and digest it and pull it apart and find the right answer, typically based off a gut feeling and being in my own head through solitude in endurance training. And that's one of the things I love about endurance training. And I think endurance training by itself has helped me grow my business exponentially because of the solitude I've been able to experience through training itself. Or sometimes I'll listen to the business audiobooks when I'm on the bike for hours. But the solitude aspect of it, it's not like one thing I'm thinking about all the time. It's, you know, things that are going on in business or my life or relationship. You know, I can dissect it, digest it, and really pull valuable, like, concrete answers from.
So many people are inspired by Nick Bear. Who inspires you?
My team. I really don't have, like, I get this question a lot, but I don't really have a mentor that I necessarily look up to that I'm like, I'm inspired by this person. I'm inspired by the people that walk in this building every day who are living, breathing our mission and what we're trying to accomplish in this world. And they show up with as much ownership and responsibility as I feel that I have and that I do have. And that's what inspires me. Like, that's what motivates me to keep pushing, because I have a responsibility for people who are just as, maybe not monetarily, but mentally and emotionally invested into this thing that we're building. And that's my responsibility, and that's what pushes me.
What, you've spent a lot of time building yourself online and documenting your journey online. What's been the most unexpected benefit of that process?
Probably just the outcome of everything we have right now. The intent in the beginning was never to, like, create a social media platform that turned into this building I'm in right now. You know, when you start, you don't really know where you're going to end up, or you know, you film that first video, you upload it, it gets 10 views, 10 dislikes, and you're like, crap, this ain't for me. But just seeing the evolution of it over the years, the people I've met, the stories we've heard, the emails we've received, the phone calls we've received, man, it's been so rewarding, so powerfully rewarding that I never take it for granted, because I know we've been blessed with such an opportunity that opportunity is a responsibility, and that responsibility requires us to show up every single day and put in the work.
You've said that your entire life is an obsession, an act of overcommitting. Has there ever been something you've overcommitted towards that you haven't been happy with how it turned out?
Yeah, I'm sure, but I'm really good at pivoting. So there's been things where, like, I've fully committed on, dove super deep into them, realized that it wasn't going necessarily where I wanted it to go. So I just pivoted into something else to make it, like, work. Like, I'm pretty good at trusting my gut and identifying when things are going well and when things aren't. And I have a really good team here that is kind of, like, helping me make these decisions. But we can identify pretty early on, you know, we'll do a lot of market research. We'll do a lot of testing first, alpha beta testing. So before we like overcommit on something, we do our research, like we do our due diligence. So like if there's something I want to do, I'll take action on it, but that action is not necessarily like going and buying it first. It's doing the market research. Like action isn't just like going and like taking step five. It's taking step one, which is like your due diligence before getting to step five. So like we avoid a lot of that, like the wrong decisions by making the right decisions leading up to it.
When you think of pivoting, what are some of the things that tell you it's time to go in a different direction?
A lot of it's my gut, a gut feeling. A lot of it is the feedback from, you know, our community online. You can't listen to people all the time, but if a majority of people are telling you one thing, sometimes you need to listen to it. Sometimes you don't have to. The people in this building, like our team, listening to what the team is saying and their feedback. So like there's always a soundboard that our decisions are being judged off of, whether internally in this building or externally on social media or online. So we're constantly all day, every day getting feedback from somewhere or someone. So like, that's like the pro and con of it is you put something out there, it's instantly getting either positive reinforcement or negative reinforcement. And then you make small pivotal changes based off of that reinforcement.
Has it gotten overwhelming, all the feedback, all the noise? And if so, how do you deal with it?
I personally don't look at any YouTube comments anymore. I found that different social media platforms have different audiences and communities, where I found people that follow you on Instagram, like they are like true supporters. That is your community. They want to support you. YouTube, being the second biggest search engine after Google, typically, you know, brings in an audience of people who kind of want to hate on you or criticize you. So I don't look at any YouTube comments anymore, just because typically they're pretty negative. But for me, like Instagram is where we'll pull a lot of the positive reinforcement or constructive criticism from a negative sense. So, I mean, I've been to a spot, and I'm sure a lot of other creators have, where you start getting a lot of negative constructive criticism or just like negative reinforcement. It starts to affect your ability to make decisions and the right decision. So I do try to avoid certain platforms that will influence my ability to make the right decision for the right people.
What was the point when you were just like, all right, I can't look at these anymore? Because I'm sure in the beginning you were looking at it all the time on YouTube. Was there a specific moment or set of moments where you're like, this is too much, I gotta get out of this cesspool?
Yeah, it's probably like 2 years ago where it affected my ability to create. For one, it was taking time away from me that I needed to spend on the business, or like physical time. Like time was better spent on the business or with the team rather than consuming the feedback online. And then it started affecting my like mental ability to create and grow the brand and the team, because it would kind of just get in my head. So I told myself, all right, I'm just not going to look at it anymore, because my head and my positive, like my physical and mental well-being is in a better spot if I don't. And it's one of those things, to be honest with yourself. Like if, for example, if you like to drink alcohol, but alcohol is doing more good or more bad for you than good, well, then you need to eliminate that. If you like eating cheeseburgers, but you're eating too many cheeseburgers and it's doing more bad for you than good, well, stop eating all those cheeseburgers. It's like you find what is adding to your life or what is taking away. And if something's taking away or adding negativity and stress, that's avoidable stress, well, eliminate it, get rid of it.
Something or someone rather that I'm sure has added a lot to your life is your wife. And I was blown away when doing research for this conversation that your wife gave you a journal that she had written for the past 3 years of your relationship for a wedding gift, and you gave her a blank journal. How absurd is that? And like, just speak a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Where like we gave each other presents on our wedding day, and I was mind blown because I'll find everything, but she was writing this journal with journal entries almost every single day for the last 3 years of our relationship. And I don't know when she would write these, or I don't know how I never saw her writing these, but she gave me this journal on our wedding day of, you know, it's just going back to storytelling, full circle, our story, a chapter of our life before marriage. And then I gave her on our wedding day this blank journal, wrapped in leather canvas. Her journal to me was wrapped in leather canvas.
Wow.
Mine was blank, saying, this is to document the next chapter of our life. So that blew my mind, because it's like one chapter closes, the other opens, and there's this physical thing that represents those. It's not just this like mindset thing. That was crazy. That was wild.
Are there any other synchronicities or odd things that have happened over the past, I don't know, 3-5 years that you point to and you're like, how did that happen? Like, how is that possible? Anything stand out?
Not really. I mean, there's obviously things that have happened that we've gotten really lucky with, where, you know, like I said, I'm pretty early on, I was ignorant to the risks I was taking. So I had to take some risks that if they wouldn't have worked out in our favor the way they did, we wouldn't be sitting right here. So yeah, we've gotten lucky a few spots along the way. But you kind of create your own luck, where you have to put something out there. You have to take this risk. You have to take this action. And there's times you're going to lose and you're going to miss, but there's also times you're going to win and you're going to gain. So you take the losses like a champ with a punch in the chin, and then you do the same things with the wins. And they balance each other out, but hopefully along the way you get more wins and losses.
For sure. So you mentioned in the book about a speech you gave to the Misfits, and you saw their potential that they didn't see in themselves. I'm curious if you could recreate that speech or give a speech similar to those listening. What do you say to that group?
Yeah, it was along the lines of, you know, I was driving to work one morning, and I was just thinking, I was getting angry because I saw so much potential in my platoon, in my soldiers, my non-commissioned officers, and they didn't see that same potential in themselves. They kind of like thought they were like not smart. They thought they were stupid. They didn't think they had potential to do these amazing, great things, because they thought these people that did amazing, great things were born with those gifts. And that's why I kind of love our journey, our stories, because we weren't really born with any special gifts. We weren't given any special thing. It's just that we worked so hard to build what we wanted to build behind pure passion. And I showed up to PT one morning, and we got done doing this workout, and I just like had to let them know this. And we were done training and we were stretching in the circle. And I just like, I told them, I see so much potential in all of you guys. Like you guys can do whatever you want. You can be president. You can be a general in the army. You can be a professional athlete. Like, whatever you want to do, it is literally in your hands. And so many people don't realize it's in their hands and they just let it go. But the ones that truly realize like they can do whatever they want to do with the work that needs to be done, whether that takes them 5 days, 5 months, 5 years, five fucking decades, you know, it can take forever. You can do whatever you want to do. And I was getting so angry because I knew and I saw that so many of them didn't believe in themselves as much as I believed in them. And it made me angry to the point where I had to let them know this. So I think that this sub 3 hour marathon for me, building my business for me, the things I'm going to do after, you know, moving forward in the future, is a clear example to the rest of the population that I wasn't born with anything special. You know, in high school, I wasn't a stud athlete, but I realized the potential that I had. In order to get there, I just had to keep driving forward, run off pure passion. That passion is fuel. And it's gotten me to this point, and it's going to take me a whole lot further, because that passion, like, for me, just doesn't die. It's this flame that doesn't go out.
Well, it sounds like you're going to be an incredible father if you end up going down that route. What would be some of the key lessons you'd want to instill in a child, male or female?
Yeah, I think one would be the one that my dad taught me. Like, if it were easy, everyone would do it. Realizing that if there's something you want, don't expect it to be easy, or don't anticipate it to be easy. Don't even wish for it to be easy. You want things to be as hard as possible, because you're going to gain so much from it. You want to fail because you know you're going to gain so much from it. So, like, just instilling that lesson in my kids, that if there's something you want, just hope that it is difficult and it is hard. And then also instilling the fact that you can do whatever you want to do. You can be whoever you want to be. And that person shouldn't be influenced by who everyone is telling you you should be or what you should do, but truly behind what you are passionate and driven behind. You know, and if my kids use those two lessons, and they're good people, and, you know, they're law-abiding citizens, and they serve our community and our society, I'll be proud of them.
I love it. And finally, Nick, what would Nick, 40-year-old Nick, tell you today?
40-year-old Nick, keep the foot on the gas and press it to the floor and keep driving forward, buddy, because it's all going to be worth it. And my foot is on the floor and it's pressing hard.
I love it, man. I absolutely love it. Where can people find more Nick Bear in their life?
Yeah, Instagram is at Nick Bear Fitness. My last name is Bare. And then if you just search Nick Bear on YouTube, I have hundreds of videos that'll pop up. Right now, those videos are Ironman prep series videos, but I have everything from military related to nutrition to training to business. So yeah, those are my two major platforms I use.
I love it. And check out all the videos this man has created, and they're really awesome. Thank you, Nick, for taking the time. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Hope you guys enjoyed the conversation with Nick Bear. If you have any thoughts or feedback about the episode, let me know on Twitter at HeyDannyMiranda. Looking forward to your feedback. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.